Can this be used as a pointer? Maybe I'll just... So let me first speak about begin by talking about moduli stabilization in string gas cosmology, and specifically I'll be talking about work done in collaboration with Subodh Patil, a graduate student of mine at Brown, and work done in collaboration with Edna Chung, who's here, and Scott Watson, another graduate student of mine at Brown. So what is string gas cosmology? Well, it is much more heuristic, unfortunately, than what you've just heard. So it is an attempt to explore the consequences of string theory for cosmology in the absence of an established non-perturbative string theory. And if you just imagine how we try to do cosmology in point particle quantum mechanics in the absence of quantum field theory, you know that we are liable to miss an incredible rich structure for cosmology. For example, there would be no way of getting inflation. So we don't know non-perturbative string theory, but nevertheless, we try to do cosmology. So what we are advocating is to make use of things in string theory that have a good chance of surviving, being present and important in the non-perturbative theory, namely mu degrees of freedom that you don't have in point particle theory, and mu symmetries, namely a very naive version of the t-duality which you just heard of. So we have to make an ad hoc split between a classical background on which the strings propagate and the stringy matter. That's not very satisfactory, but that's what we have to do. So the key challenges that we want to address in this heuristic approach is we want to resolve cosmological singularities. We want to explain why there are only three large spatial dimensions in a theory which is mathematically consistent only in a larger number of spatial dimensions. And we also want to provide a dynamical mechanism to stabilize the moduli that you have, for example, the radii of compact dimensions. So our background is a background of Dilaton gravity, and it is operating on a democratic background. And we take the topology of the space to be R for time and a nine-dimensional torus, all nine dimensions equivalent. The degrees of freedom are the stringy degrees of freedom of type 2 superstring theory, although mostly I'll actually be using just the truncation of the bosonic string theory. And no physical model is complete without initial conditions. And I will be choosing, and it's very important for the scenario, conservative initial conditions, conservative in the sense of current cosmology. Namely, I'll be assuming that the universe starts out as hot gas and all radii small string scale. So those are my initial conditions. This scenario was first put forward by Kumanbach and myself a long time ago. So I'm sure most of you know what t-duality is, this elementary version of t-duality which I'll be using. And this is just taking the torus, replacing the radius of the torus by 1 over r in string units, and interchanging the quantum numbers of momentum and winding modes. And the mass spectrum of strings is invariant under the symmetry. I'm told that the vertex operators are invariant under that symmetry as well. And if you then postulate that this is a symmetry of non-perturbative string theory, you get the D-braids, as discussed in Polchinski's textbook. So this is a symmetry that we take. And again, as Simeon indicated, this symmetry exchanges the dimension of brains. If you t-dualize in all nine spatial dimensions, a p-brain becomes a 9 minus p-brain. So now I will argue that within this framework, there's a chance that you can avoid cosmological singularities and that you can produce, that you can have a scenario in which only three spatial dimensions become large. Let me first argue thermodynamically. Let's imagine we start with a large torus and we gradually shrink the radius of the torus. The energy starts out being in the light modes at large radius, which are the momentum modes. But as you approach the self-dual radius, the energy gradually drifts into the modes which are light for small r, namely the momentum modes. And symmetry says that T of R is equal to T of 1 over R. So there's no physical temperature singularity associated with this mathematical singularity of that number. And you can similarly argue that the length, which a physical observer will measure, is also symmetric under R goes to 1 over R. And then if you have R varying in time, you immediately get a bouncing cosmology. So there's a chance that string gas cosmology will lead to a bouncing cosmology like that advocated in the pre-Big Bang or ekpyrotic scenario. It will never hit the Hagedorn temperature. That's not an assumption. If you stay in thermal equilibrium, you can show that this withdraws. So that's a singularity issue. Now, the scenario for that gives only three large dimensions relies on the assumption that there are no long-range forces between the strings. In that case, and on the fact that the presence of winding modes prevents space from expanding. That can be shown from the equations of motion. So now the idea here is that if you start very small in thermal equilibrium, you start with many winding modes. If you want a spatial dimension to become large, the winding modes have to annihilate. Strings are two-dimensional world sheets. These two-dimensional world sheets cannot intersect in more than four space-time dimensions. So therefore, you can only eliminate these winding modes in three spatial dimensions. And therefore, only three spatial dimensions can become large. So that's the conjecture that Baffa and I put forward a long time ago. Now, to a certain extent, this can be supported by equations of motion. So our action is the action of dilaton gravity coupled to an ideal gas of stringy matter degrees of freedom. And so from this action, under the assumption of homogeneity and isotropy, you derive three equations of motion. The two Freeman-Robertson-Walker-like equations plus the Dilaton equation of motion. The two Freeman-Robertson-Walker equations plus the Dilaton equation of motion. That's assuming isotropy. So now focus on this equation, second equation. You immediately see that negative pressure implies a confining potential for lambda. Lambda is the logarithm of the scale factor. So negative pressure means the spatial dimension cannot grow. And string winding modes provide negative pressure. So this supports the point that string winding modes prevent expansion. And dilaton gravity is crucial to reach this conclusion. So now, this set of equations is incomplete because it does not describe the annihilation of winding modes. So to supplement this system of equations, we have to add equations which describe how, on a torus, two winding modes can self-intersect to produce two loops. And these equations have been well studied in the cosmic string literature. And these are these two equations. So rho sub W is the energy density in winding modes. Rho sub L is the energy density in the remnants, in the loops. It takes two winding modes to cross. So therefore, the change in the number density of winding modes is given by the redshift factor and minus something that depends on the square of the number density of winding modes, because it takes two to cross. And the energy that is lost here goes into the loops. So we assume no long-range forces. So now we have a system of five equations, which you can study to follow the evolution of the scale factor as a function of time, the number density of winding modes as a function of time, and the number density of loops as a function of time. That's a simulation. We've started at the self-dual radius. We've set the universe in the expanding phase. We expand. The presence of winding modes leads to a recollapse During the recollapse, the number of winding modes increases. You get frequent annihilations. Loops are produced. Once the number density of winding modes is dropped to a sufficiently low value, the universe can start expanding again. I'm out of thermal equilibrium. Because the universe is expanding, the heavy degrees of freedom fall out of equilibrium quickly. So I'm doing exactly the same thing I do in regular cosmology. I follow the thermodynamic evolution until freeze out. Heavy degrees of freedom freeze out quickly. And then I follow the evolution out of thermal equilibrium. So now let me turn to the recent work, which is the issue of moduli stabilization. So in this framework, we want to stabilize the radii of the other tori, the volume moduli, and the shape moduli, for example, the ratios of the R's and the angles of the tori. So there are, and we'd also like to stabilize the dilaton. So three steps. In the first works, we showed that based on t-duality, we immediately got radion stabilization in the string frame. In the second step, we show that T duality plus including the existence of modes, which are massless at the self-dual radius, they lead to a stabilization of the radion also in the Einstein frame, namely after the dilaton has been stabilized. That's the recent work of Subodh and myself. And then in the third step, and that's the work with Edna and Scott Watson, we've then shown that dynamically, the angle of the tori are also stabilized. So these are the three steps. And how much time have I used? 15 minutes? That's about 15 minutes. I have 5 more minutes to show some details. So radion stabilization in the string frame. Now we make an anisotropic ansatz for the metric. We plug this into the action, and so instead of getting 3 equations, we get 5 equations, 2 for each scale factor. These are the equations. 2 Friedmann-type equations for each scale factor, plus the dilaton equation. It's my 5 equations. These are the 2 equations I'm going to focus on now. So now, if I apply these equations to the situation where there are no more winding modes about the 3 large dimensions, but lots of winding modes about the small dimensions, you have a negative P sub mu, which keeps mu confined. And the expansion of the 3 large dimensions provides a damping term in the equation of motion. And that provides damped oscillation of the radion about the self-dual radius. And this is the numerical part. So by hand, we started the radion away from the self-dual radius. And here you see that it naturally stabilizes about the self-dual radius without introducing any new features. It's just the combination of string winding and string momentum modes about the x dimension. That's that the background gas is a radiation gas in the 3 large dimensions. That's causing the 3 large dimensions to expand. And that gives rise to a damping term in the equation of motion for mu, which is this damping term here. Lambda dot, that's the Hubble expansion rate in the above the 3 dimensions. That's P equals minus 1/3 rho in 3 dimensions. OK, so now radion stabilization at late time. So the idea is similar. We insert this anisotropic ansatz for the metric into now the Einstein equations, general relativity plus string gas. And now we look at the resulting equation for B. And we find basically a damped harmonic oscillator equation with a source. And the key feature is that this source, 4 string modes, which are massless at the self-dual radius, this S vanishes. There's a state, this term here vanishes only if you have the massless modes. And so if you consider massless modes, and if you start at the self-dual radius, those are the ones that will be present in most abundance, then it is these terms in the source that dominate, and this provides a confining potential at the self-dual radius. So, finally, if we introduce an angle in the torus, so we have a two-dimensional torus, we introduce an angle, which is pi over 2 minus theta, then we insert this metric into the equations that we had, the Einstein equations plus string gas. Now we focus on the x, y, and the t, t Einstein equations. These. We combine the equations, and out pops a harmonic oscillator equation, which has a stable fixed point at theta equals 0, even in the absence of fluxes. You see if B is equal to 0. And I think based on the previous talk, we actually need B equals 0 for consistency. So it looks, and I should mention that Edna Chung and Peter Langfelder are working on a generalization of this shape moduli stabilization mechanism to general conformal Calabi-Yau manifolds. We only considered the simplest version, T2. So the conclusion of this part of the talk is that string gas cosmology provides an indication that you can do many nice things, namely resolve cosmological singularities, get only three spatial dimensions to be large, and stabilize the moduli. And these considerations are dynamical, as opposed to just static. That's another advantage compared to other work on moduli stabilization. However, the whole framework is too heuristic for my case. And we should really make progress on improving, adding better string theory to this framework. And so for those of you who are interested in helping out, there's an advertisement for a weekend workshop, which we'll be having at McGill, where I in particular invite string theorists to come and help us to either make this scenario better defined from the point of view of string theory, or else to help us debunk it completely. So now I'd like to turn to this other issue, which I've been asked to speak about, namely the recent paper by Kolb, Matarese, Notari, and Ryoto that claims that you can get an accelerating universe from the gravitational back reaction of cosmological perturbations under the assumption that the universe had zero bare cosmological constant. Now, first of all, I should mention that this is a very modest version of a much more ambitious and also older approach, namely the claim that dynamical relaxation of the bare cosmological constant, which is positive, can be achieved by the gravitational back reaction of cosmological perturbations. And that the final state is a dynamical fixed point where the energy density fraction in the effect of cosmological constant is about 50%. This is a review article about the older work. Okay, so what is this new argument by Kolb and collaborators? So the assumption is that we have Einstein gravity, only regular matter obeying the strong energy condition, and that we have a large phase space of super Hubble scale modes. Hubble radius is H inverse, commonly miscalled horizon. Miscalled horizon. Super Hubble mode. I should write that down on the board. H inverse of T. Not the horizon. Okay? So the claim is that long wavelength fluctuations can affect the locally measured value of the cosmological deceleration parameter Q0. That there's a large variance in Q0, different points in space have very different values of Q0, and that if we are in an underdense region relative to the average, then the locally measured value of Q0 will be negative. So those are the claims. Now note that this mechanism does not solve the cosmological constant problem because it assumes that there are cosmological constant vanishes. It does not solve the coincidence problem, because there's a large variance in Q0. But it does obviate the need for dark energy, which is tremendous progress. It is a leading effect to second-order perturbation theory. So in quantum mechanical language, it's a one-loop effect. Excuse me. You'll see. It's actually gradient expansion, turns out. But in the loop are the scalar degrees of freedom of the gravitational perturbations. Now, there's a history of gravitational back reaction work. And by back reaction, I mean the effects of perturbations on the background. There's also previous work on the effects of the conformal factor on the background. And Ignatius is one of the people who's worked on that. So the work on gravitational back reaction of the inhomogeneities in the background started with pioneering work of Tsamis and Woodard, where they considered pure gravity, no matter, in a model with the positive cosmological constant, and claimed that back reaction of infrared modes gave you a relaxation of the cosmological constant. The one loop effect vanishes, they had to go to two loop. And no one else but Richard Woodard and Nick Tsamis can do these two loop calculations. Very complicated calculations. Then later on, we considered a system with gravity plus matter and a bare cosmological constant, which is positive. In this case, the one loop back reaction of the infrared cosmological perturbations, the scalar matter fluctuations, does not vanish, and it gives a negative contribution to the cosmological constant, which then was argued before the supernova data came out to give rise to a dynamical relaxation mechanism for the cosmological constant, yielding a dynamical fixed point where omega in the effective bandwidth is about 1. Now, this work was criticized by Bill Unruh, and later, Ghazal Geshitsiani and myself showed that the leading non-gradient infrared back reaction terms, which we had computed, act are locally measurable only if they are entropy perturbations. Okay, so let me come back to that a little bit later. Here, what we mean is we take a scalar field, which is, for example, m squared phi squared, but we have a positive offset. Our model is scalar field matter, v of phi equals v0, positive plus m squared phi squared. Yeah, this is a classical analysis. Semi-classical analysis. Quantum mechanics enters in the to determine the amplitude of the fluctuations that back react. But the analysis is classical. Okay, so now about a year ago, Ghazal Geshitsiani and Nir Shafshadi were the first to calculate the leading infrared gradient terms. And they showed that these were locally measurable even in the absence of entropy perturbation, so for a single matter field, but that these effects were small in general. And so this recent work, it studies the leading infrared gradient terms in a model without entropy perturbations, but it shows that these effects can be large. It claims that these effects can be large if the spectrum of fluctuations is red, very large amplitude on large wavelengths, and that this can lead to negative Q0 for some regions of space. So this is a brief history. Now I'll finish by giving two sets of objections to this. Common objections, which are wrong, and technical objections, which may very well be right. So common objections you hear is that this cannot possibly be true because super Hubble modes cannot affect local physics by causality. Now this is absolutely wrong because the Hubble radius is not the horizon. In inflationary cosmology, the forward light cone, the horizon, is exponentially larger than the Hubble radius. And we are using sub-horizon, but super-Hubble modes to back react. So then,
average.
So let me talk. Okay, there's no, I didn't mention average. This work by Kolb does not do any average. Yes, but a back reaction, a large variance, you get in different regions of space different results. There's no averaging going on. That's an advantage of this recent work. Now, another claim is that there cannot be back reaction of infrared modes because this violates locality. All of physics should be, all of gravitational physics, if there are only infrared modes, should be expressible in terms of Friedmann equations. And yes, the infrared back reaction is expressible in terms of local Friedmann equations, and what it leads to is a rescaling of the cosmological constant and, in general, the curvature, as shown in a paper written about three quarters of a year ago by Harry Lam and myself. And we found that you do get a rescaling of curvature if the background is not inflationary. So these are common objections which you'll probably often hear, which are wrong, at least in my opinion. But now there are a whole series of papers that came out in the last few days with specific objections. First of all, Ghazal Geshitsyan, who you'll probably notice is an author of many of the previous papers on back reaction, Daniel Chung, a former graduate student of Rocky Colts, and Nia Shafshali, they analyzed the, since they'd already worked on gradient, on these gradient terms, they reanalyzed this and showed that this effect that Kolb and all discussed is equivalent to a local rescaling of the curvature. And such rescalings of the curvature are bounded by CMB observations to be very small. So therefore, they concluded that this effect cannot be large. Then there are two papers, one by Ian Flanagan, the other one by Hirata and Seldra, where they use the local Reichardt equation of general relativity to show that the acceleration parameter cannot change sign without having a fluid present which violates the strong energy condition, for example, a cosmological constant. And Hirata and Seldrak make a more general argument. They show that causality does not prohibit infrared back reaction, but in the absence of entropy perturbations, it limits their magnitude. And now, from my reading, actually, these papers are correct. There's also a paper by David Wiltshire, who studies a specific, exactly soluble model in which the Kolb et al. Mechanism can be studied, and it finds that the effect is basically present, but too small to give rise to a change in Q0. So now you'll notice that none of these objections affect the back reaction work apply to a scenario where you have a large cosmological constant and you try to reduce that by gravitational back reaction because there is a fluid that violates a strong energy condition. So, conclusions? And obviously, this subject is brand new, so my personal view is also developing. In fact, it might change over the next hours due to your feedback. The specific back reaction scenarios called it out. It may, at the end, and evidence points to the fact that it does not work. However, the objections do not affect attempts to use back reaction to solve the cosmological constant problem. And to quote John Iliopoulos, I've heard him say this in two international conferences in France, if you restrict yourself to a theory with only four space-time dimensions, back reaction may be the only game in town to solve the cosmological constant problem. So I think back reaction is well and alive, even if the specific mechanism may not work. Let me remind you that the first model of inflation was dead from the beginning, as Guth wrote in his seminal paper. So even if the first attempt to obviate dark energy using back reaction doesn't work, doesn't mean that the basic scenario doesn't work. So I think it's very interesting, and you should pay attention to it. So thanks a lot.
Oh, a lot of questions, so yeah, we start here. using a recharge equation, which is a general statement about non-FRW models, then you can only show that Q0 is positive, the deceleration parameter, when you have zero vorticity.
This is the essence.
But in general, the vorticity is not zero, so the proof doesn't go through for in the case of strong energy conditions.
That's right. So
this is what they're saying is not in general correct, actually.
That's right. But what happens in an inflationary scenario, so if you want to use inflation to generate this sea of long wavelength perturbations, then inflation will reduce the vorticity to a negligible value, and the vorticity cannot increase afterwards, which is shown